This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He has time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown, Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He's going hard at that Red Raider!
Puts up the 10, puts it up the right sideline!
Yeah, he's got to go, he's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS championship.
Hello and welcome to the Republic of Football. I'm your host, Ishmael Johnson, here with a little bit more color in his face now that the bulk of his workload is done for the year. Mike Craven. Mike, look a little rested, look a little rejuvenated now that we don't have to cover every single team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I got a day off. Thursday was mostly a day off, first one since August 28th. So yeah, I'm doing pretty, only a 6-day work week this week. So that's not too bad.
Hey. Not bad at all. And of course, with us as usual is Mallory Hartley. Mallory, how are you?
Doing well. It's crazy to say only a 6-day work week this week. That's exciting, right?
Hey, it is funny. What it is in the fall, right?
Yeah.
Alrighty. So we are back with your final full recap edition post Thanksgiving, post Black Friday, post everything going on in the state. I mean, we'll just get right into it. We had results all over the place, but we got to start with the one with the most stakes on both sides of the field. North Texas 21, Rice 17. Mean Green punched their ticket on senior day to the Conference USA Championship. Rice did not make it easy. They knew, obviously, they were playing for what they thought was bowl eligibility at the time. And, you know, we can talk about that a little bit after, but North Texas obviously was playing for a conference championship and a rematch with UT, or at least a trip to the conference championship rematch with UTSA. Craven, I mean, we saw seemingly the best and worst of both teams, in my opinion, in this game. We saw a Rice team that really knew how to control the ball when they needed to, but also they threw out AJ Padgett, who was luckily, you know, we kind of were saying, okay, it's another quarterback for Rice. Is this going to be another bad? He had a turnover, but for the most part, I thought looked pretty okay. Austin Ani played fine, right? They didn't ask him to do a lot. It was mostly in the run game. Keiko Ragsdale had over 100 yards on the ground. And I'd say Rice's defense probably kept UNT's big plays in check, which is what a lot of the thing they've relied on. What did you see in this game and UNT in the end getting it done, punching through, getting a huge victory to set up a rematch with UTSA next week?
Yeah, I mean, the weather was really bad yesterday in Denton, and I think that hurt the passing game, at least the vertical passing game, especially for North Texas, because that's what North Texas is quietly, right? Like, they run the football to set up the big passing plays, similar to what UTEP did for most of last year. And you know, you could tell Rice, you know, played a safety over the top and, you know, allowed some running gaps to happen. Ragsdale ended up with, you know, 122 yards on 17 carries. Had a touchdown run and a touchdown catch in the second half that kind of iced the game away. And so for me, it felt like a North Texas team that had everything to play for and knew it. And it kind of weighed them down a little bit. And those stakes can get to you. You know, this is kind of a new situation for most of the players on the roster. The most important game any of them have ever really played in. And so it looked like a tight group. Rice came out with, you know, nothing to lose, really. It's kind of like, hey, let's go win this game. See if we can get to a bowl game. They played really hard. I thought AJ Padgett provided something to the Rice offense that we haven't seen before in the last couple of years. He has an arm that Wiley Green doesn't have. He has some moxie that TJ McMahon doesn't have. That was the 13th different starting quarterback Rice has played since 2017. That's the most in the FBS. And yeah. So at 5-7, with UTEP losing and there not being enough 6-6 teams to get to a bowl game, it sounds like Rice is going to get there with their APR. I think that's going to get Blomgren in that group another year. If they were going to fire Blomgren, they'd already have somebody lined up. And I know for a fact, none of those coaches have been contacted about their jobs. And so it seems like they're going to be okay there. And they probably should with just the bad luck that's hit them over the last couple of years. Rice is right there. They're right there with being a 6-6, 7-5 team. They just need consistency from that quarterback play. But there's two ways to look at North Texas's performance. You can look at it as like, they kind of limped to a finish. They barely won that game. Or you can you know, they beat a good Rice team at home in a game that they had to win to clinch a spot in the Conference USA championship game. It doesn't always have to be pretty. They won the game that they were supposed to win, and now they set up a week at UTSA against a team that they were seconds away from beating, who they know they can beat because they did it to them last year in week 13. And, you know, they go and they win that football game. And this is an excellent season for North Texas with the Conference USA championship, when all of our expectations were maybe they get to 6-6.
Right. No, I think that's a good point. I mean, we had very measured expectations despite what we saw from them in the second half of last year, kind of them finally establishing an identity. But, you know, to start this year, obviously it is what it was. And that's, you know, a discussion for maybe in the offseason going forward to the AAC. But when they got to conference play, right, they were kind of reestablished that identity. They added, you know, Austin Ani looked different as a passer. He looked more developed as a downfield thrower, right? Maybe the play calling favored him a little bit more when it came to conference play. Maybe it let him, you know, like we've talked about with multiple teams this year, kind of letting your quarterback be who he is, right? He's not somebody that's going to be a generational arm talent that's going to lead you by himself, but he's somebody who can get you down the field, hit a big play when you need to. If you don't ask him to throw 50 times, he's not going to turn the ball over. If you only throw it 25 to 30, whatever. And if you have a defense the way they've been playing, I mean, you know, Rice on the first drive or the second drive turned the ball over. UNT got to turn, you know, in the red or not in the red zone. They got the ball back in the red zone and scored right away. And all of a sudden, you know, they're off on the front foot. And so, yeah, I mean, this is a UNT team that's playing for something, right? And they have an edge, right? They're taking kind of like the personality of their head coach when they get down into a slug fight and a fist fight, like somebody like Rice, who needed to win this game if they wanted to go to a bowl, or at least what they thought they had to win this game at the time. You know, they're gonna be willing to, and they're gonna be willing to go in there and come out and play physical. So yeah, this is gonna be an interesting game going into the weekend. Because like you mentioned, they had this team beat and on the road, similar situation, all that stuff. And we'll talk about UTSA, and they haven't been the cleanest team recently. So yeah, there's something definitely there for the taking. All righty. If we got nothing else to say on that one, we can go on to our other game of the week. All right, Mike, you were in the building for this one, right? Texas, Baylor?
Yep.
All right, so let's go. Texas 38, Baylor 27, what I called the Thanksgiving tradition you obviously knew about and obviously grew up with, and I will not hear otherwise. this one, Craven, this one's continued for me the tradition, the two-week tradition of Texas fans feeling frustrated that this is not what their team was. Because Bijan Robinson, on his presumably his senior day, 179 carries on, or 179 yards on 29 carries. Roshan Johnson, 70 plus yards on 13 carries. And they take care of business. Like, it didn't look pretty, right? Blake, we can have the Baylor discussion about Blake Shapen in that offense, but you know, the Texas defense, we know this defense is really good, and it's been the consistency on offense. It's been the first half versus the second half. It's been the first quarter to the second quarter. You know, 2 weeks now, Sark's just kept it simple and said, you know what, I'm just going to ride my two star running backs, and we're going to get out of here with a win. And that's exactly what's happened.
When Baylor recovered that fumble with 13:30 left in the fourth quarter, returned it back for a touchdown and took a 27-24 lead, I looked around and said, uh-oh, like here it is.
We've seen this, right? We've seen the story.
That is a game that Texas loses. And so I think it's a very important step for the Longhorns that they came back and won this football game. It felt like a program and a locker room that needed to see this, that needed to see them overcome some adversity and just dominate a team down the stretch and just go win a football game, put their foot on somebody's throat and go win a football game. And they did that. And to Sark's credit, and I don't know if this was forced upon him because Quinn was playing so bad or it was part of the plan originally, they ran the ball 22 straight times after that fumble. They did not throw another pass. And none of those were attempted passes that ended up counting as runs. Like, they did not call a pass play from 13:30 in the fourth quarter to the end of the game. They go on a 14-0 run and they win that game by 11. They cover all that stuff, right? I mean, they just went and dominated the game. And it stinks for Texas fans that it took until the last game in DKR for Roshan Johnson and Bijan Robinson to be like, well, that's what you do. That's the recipe. Mm-hmm. You run those guys 25 times each you pound against teams and you take over in the fourth quarter. They wore down Baylor. They did to Baylor what Baylor did to Texas last year. They out physicaled on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They beat them up. And in the fourth quarter, Baylor's offense couldn't do anything. And in the fourth quarter, Baylor's defense could not hold and stop and tackle those two really good running backs. And so a great win for Texas, as we talked about in the pregame show or the pre-week show. 8-4 sounds a lot better than 7-5. It just does. Yeah. To improve their win total by 3, and now they get a bowl chance. Maybe they can go win 9 games. They're right there. I think they're going to be on paper one of the favorites to win the Big 12 next year, and that's all this year was about, was positioning Texas back into being a conference contender. Maybe next year they take one more step, and then they're ready, you know, for SEC play. And so I think this was a very important win for Steve Sarkisian. Had they lost this game, he was going to be 12-12. In his first two regular seasons at Texas. To avoid that mark, I think, was important. And just the way that they won was important. And I know Bijan's going to be gone. Rashawn's going to be gone. But they got Jonathan Brooks back there. They got Jaden Blue back there. Cedric Baxter, a 5-star recruit out from the Southeast country, is coming in next year. And so the running game's going to be really good. Hopefully Steve Sarkisian sees this path and goes, this is how we're winning at Texas, with the running game and with defense. And then hopefully Quinn take some jumps over the offseason. Because remember, he's basically a true freshman. The kid reclassified, went to Ohio State to get a bag. Good on him. You know, got $1 million to go hang out in Columbus. Comes back. But he's basically 18 years old, just now figuring it out. So the jumps that Hudson Card made from 2021 to 2022, hopefully those are the same ones that Quinn Ewers makes, because he's got all the talent in the world. He just looks like a guy who has no urgency and doesn't know exactly how to be in a hurry. And this isn't high school anymore. Those guys are flying around. You got to have some urgency. I think that's something that they work on in the offseason. But again, I think a big win for Texas, an important win for Texas. And then on Baylor's side, I mean, there's a Blake Shapen conversation to be had. When everything is really good, you know, the pocket's clean, wide receivers are open, Blake Shapen's arm talent is unquestionably better than what Gary Bohannon had. But he makes a lot of bad throws and a lot of bad decisions. And it's one of those things that held them back. If Baylor had an adequate quarterback on Friday, they beat Texas.
Yeah, I think so. To finish up my thoughts on Texas, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of first year real starter Colt McCoy, right? When he beat out Jevon Snead the year before and they throw him out to, you know, they throw him to the Wolves this next year. He's like, you're the guy. And he throws, I think, like 30 touchdowns to like 18 picks. Like, he was not ready to be the guy. But they had a Jamal Charles, remember? And Jamal Charles had his big breakout year where he finishes with like over 1,800 yards from scrimmage and something like that. And then the next year, right, Colt McCoy kind of comes on and becomes the Colt McCoy that we knew. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Quinn Ewers, but what I'm saying is, here's a guy who maybe wasn't, like you mentioned, essentially a true freshman, right? A guy who's not ready to maybe be the guy shouldering the offensive load. And except the difference between this year and that year with Colt McCoy and Jamal Charles was that Jamal Charles was perhaps at the time, because Mac Brown was a lot more settled in and all that stuff, Mac Brown didn't feel the need to put the whole offense on Colt McCoy, right? He's like, you know, we have Jamal Charles, we're going to do this, et cetera. Steve Sarkisian maybe felt a little bit more pressure because he got his guy in, right? Maybe he needed to, okay, we got to show that he is the guy. But I would not be shocked, because like you mentioned, this looks like a guy who just hadn't seen reps and this type of reps in multiple years. He looked like he was still standing back there. His footwork wasn't the best. He looks like he was still relying on a lot of his arm, like you mentioned, arm talent, just pure arm talent. But another offseason, maybe give somebody to push him in spring, not saying you bring in somebody that's going to start, you know, immediate or guaranteed to start, but put somebody in like an Arch Manning that can push him a little bit in spring, right? That gets him going a little bit. But yeah, I think this Texas team is still on the way. Backfield's going to be fine with the incoming talent. Baylor, though. Yeah, this is... speaking of guys you probably got to push in the offseason, Blake Shapen's going to have to see some... He clearly doesn't... I don't know. I clearly do not think that they think Drones is a guy who they can push him. I don't know. I felt like he would have come in a little bit after Shapen came back if they thought he was a guy who could lead them forward. If you're Baylor, I feel like you got to bring in somebody that can at least make Shapen work a little bit in the spring, because a lot of the issues, my biggest issue with Blake Shapen is that I can't say that he was better from the Big 12 championship last year to now. And that's a problem, right? That's a development issue on his part. And so I can look to a bunch of quarterbacks that struggled throughout the year, struggled throughout their career, and I could say point A to point B, they are different, right? They are a better quarterback that they were worth gambling on. I'm not saying that it wasn't worth the gamble moving on from Bahanan. I think it was if you think Chapin is the guy. But from point A to point B, I can't say that he's better. I can say that he's maybe plateaued. I don't know if he's regressed. I think he's just is what he is. I think he's is what he is. I think he's the same quarterback with less talent around him, which is still a problem. But yeah, there's a conversation to be had. I mean, Baylor, like you mentioned, we're probably talking about a Baylor team playing in a Big 12 championship game if they had a quarterback who was, you know, was a little bit more daring at times, who maybe wasn't as I don't know. Like at times he's risk averse. At times he's too risky, right? Like it's kind of like a bad medium. You don't have a guy who's not going to turn the ball over, but you don't have a guy who's going to gunsling it and throw you down, you know, throw your team down the field willingly. So I don't know. It's very awkward.
From talking to people at Baylor, they replaced the talent. They think that they're talented enough to do what they did last year. They don't see it as a talent issue. Mm-hmm. They don't have the dudes, the alphas in the locker room right now. Sure. To just grab guys by the gruff and go like, this isn't acceptable. You know, they don't have a Terrell Bernard. They don't have a Jalen Peachy. You know, even like a guy like JT Woods. And that's what Gary Bohannon was best at. Like you talk to that mm-hmm. Baylor locker, the guy was a leader. The guy was an alpha that people wanted to go play for, that brought a little bit of physicality to the position and was kind of like a fullback playing quarterback at times. Mm-hmm. Blake Chapin hasn't developed that yet. Now, maybe he can as he becomes an upperclassman. He's still just a sophomore. Maybe, you know, having a whole year as being the guy, maybe in the offseason, you know, because he doesn't have to go into this offseason wondering if he's the starter with Gary Bohannon. Sure. He is the guy. And maybe that helps him. And maybe that's you're able to develop some of those leaders on both sides of the ball. But that was the thing that was missing for me with Baylor is these are the games that they won last year when they were in dogfights and it was close in the fourth quarter. They found a way to go win those close games. This year they didn't. And so, right. You know, that can be the difference. It's not huge margins, you know, it's just a touchdown or two, a drive or two here and there. Baylor just didn't have those guys this year. And that's how you go from 12-2 to 6-6. It can happen that quickly.
Yep. All righty. Yeah, well, like unfortunately for Texas, you know, Kansas State won, so they missed out on the Big 12 championship, but they put themselves, you know, with the hand they were dealt, they put themselves in the best position they could, and they had to, you know, unfortunately have some help that was not there. All right, moving on to our last game of the week. Texas Tech 51, Oklahoma 48. Joey McGuire calls his shot back in July.
Prophecy came true.
The prophecy came true. We're going to beat Oklahoma. We're going to knock down the end zone. And damn it, Joey McGuire, he did it. I mean, what can we say? Like, this is an encapsulation. This game was an encapsulation of, like, everything he sold the program on, right? He sold a program on a team that's going to be willing to fight, a team that's going to be exciting to watch. Unfortunately, the defense, you know, is what it was again in this game. But you know, they've made Dylan Gabriel uncomfortable when they needed to. They got a turnover, right? It wasn't exactly a perfect performance from the defense, but they made some plays here and there. On the ground, they probably couldn't. You know, we'll see. The run defense probably needs a little bit of help, but that's what it is without Tyree Wilson. And they come out with a win, man. Like, there was, I will say, the one thing that frustrated me was that the only thing that really frustrated me with Texas Tech in this game was that they had the ball with a minute and a half and three timeouts. And Joey McGuire, granted, he made it. But this is the guy who's gone for fourth down, fourth and nine all year, and they play for the field goal. Now, they missed they blocked the first one, but Brent Venables calls timeout. And so they get another shot, and they kick it, go to overtime, they end up winning. Sure, ended up paying off. That had me raging a little bit. I was a little mad. I was like, you're the riverboat gamblers going for it on fourth down, three timeouts, minute and a half to go, and you settle for a field goal. Oh, buddy, if that block holds, we're having a different conversation. But we're not. It stood. End zone's knocked down. Joey McGuire is the first coach. Like, I mean, we saw it all over Twitter. You tweeted it. First coach ever to beat both Texas and Oklahoma in the same season. Insane, wild. He's going to have a statue in Lubbock.
I think the even more important stat is honestly the 5-4 record in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. You know, like they're over 500 in the Big 12 for the first time since 2009. That was the last year of Mike Leach. He's doing that in year one with Matt Wells' players who could never do this. You know, like they didn't bring in a bunch of impact players through the transfer portal. For the most part, the guys playing for Texas Tech were guys that were there under the previous staff. And he's given them a belief that they just never had. They were down 24-6 early in this game, and Oklahoma looked like they were about to rout Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And in years past, Texas Tech goes away, but they just play hard. They just play really, really hard, and that goes a long way in college football. When you look on the other side, Oklahoma's kind of going the other way, right? Like, Oklahoma doesn't have a lot of belief. Let's go get back in this game, and they're going to get tight. That's exactly what they did. I'd imagine if you gave Joey McGuire some truth serum about that last drive, there was some miscommunication issues that happened that kind of messed with the timing and the play calls and what was going on there. And so they had to like throttle it back and just like, okay, let's go for a field goal here. We kind of squandered that deal. Cause I was with you, you know, like, it's like you had time on the clock, like go score a touchdown.
The play calling nature throughout the year hints that they would go for that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that feels like something had to be wrong.
That's why I believe that something had to kind of just happen. Something was weird going on. They got their timing messed up, and they decided, well, let's not risk the field goal for the sake of the touchdown. Let's take this to overtime. We have the momentum. We're at home. Let's go win the game. And they were right. That's exactly what happened. And so a great year one for Joey McGuire. And then also, before we move on to another game, shout out Tyler Shuck. Like, that dude,
he looked good.
We've talked about it a few times, right? But that guy has gone through hell, like literal hell. In his career, just one thing after another that's not under his control. You know, it's injuries that you just can't control, collarbone stuff. A lesser man probably would, you know, just tuck it away and be done with the year, or just be done with college football. And he stuck it around. He watched Donovan Smith, he watched Baron Morton have different times of the year where it looked like they were just going to take the job by the, you know, scruff of the neck and never give it back. He stayed the course. He got healthy. He started the last four games. They go undefeated, or the last three games, they go undefeated. They're on a three-game winning streak. They get to seven wins, and it's like, well, there he is. Like, that's the guy we thought was coming to Texas Tech from Oregon. I think it's awesome when you see dudes kind of get through that adversity, overcome that stuff, and then have their moment of, like, this is why you kind of stay the course. This is why you do that stuff. And so it was really cool to see. It was really awesome to see him kind of go out with a big win there at Tech.
Does he have another year of eligibility, or is he done after this?
I don't think so, because he came back to play this year.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. But like you said, I mean, he's had moments, and I think his tools and his build, I think, should give enough to like make him intriguing. Like, I'm not saying he's going to get drafted or anything, but like, he's somebody who does have, I think, a pro future, whatever that means. Because, you know, he's 6'5", you know, he was, when he was at Oregon, he was kind of the next in line behind Justin Herbert there. And so like, there is some intrigue there on, as far as his pro prospects go. You know, yeah, he, even in this game, he battled some, like, through some adversity. He had a pick late, right? And he battled back from that, and he was right there going one-on-one with Dylan Gabriel and outgunned Dylan Gabriel. So yeah, the fact that Tech, I mentioned this, right? If you can not only go to a bowl, but then beat your record from last year after making that move, that's an automatic win for the Joey McGuire hire, for the administration who made that move, all that stuff. And all of a sudden you have the Oklahoma-Texas thing. You have, like you mentioned, the winning record in the Big 12. All of a sudden, everything, every little box, literally every single box from last year is ticked, right? As in improved. And going forward, we saw what they did last year both in the recruiting cycle and the transfer portal. You mentioned they didn't get impact guys, but they got depth, right? They got tight end depth. They got wide receiver depth. They got, you know, defensive help. And now they can go in. Maybe they can snag an impact transfer. Who knows, right? Maybe they can nab a flip in the recruiting cycle that's like, oh, man, this guy's going to Tech, right? That's what you're gambling on when you take somebody like a McGuire who can establish those relationships. So, yeah, definitely a huge win for them. And I do want to laugh a little bit at Oklahoma, who, to me, it's hilarious how a program that during our lifetime has never experienced a rebuild, and all of a sudden they show a smallest sign of mortality and the sky is falling. Oklahoma fans, it's hilarious because literally everything else except the on-field product is fine. They're recruiting fine. All these things are probably going to be okay, but it's just hilarious that they're like, what do you mean we're not winning the Big 12 again? What? Like, it's blowing their minds.
It's because you judge your breakup by how the other person's doing.
Yes, and Lincoln and Riley.
Caleb Williams is about to win the Heisman. Mm-hmm. USC is about to go to the college football playoffs. Lincoln Riley is about to lead them there. Spencer Rattler just beat Tennessee and Clemson in consecutive weeks. And
Shane
Oklahoma
Beamer,
six
your former
six.
Recruiting coordinator, Shane Beamer, is there.
Right, right. And so, like, you know, in a vacuum, this is what organically happens when you when you do a rebuild, right? But yeah. When it's been so long and the other person seems to have ended the relationship and is doing great, just living in a better place, yes. You know, not worried about
driving
taxes
because the nice
they're not poor, you know, so taxes right. don't bother you. You know, can see the ocean anytime that they want to. Yeah. And then you're still in Norman, Oklahoma going 6-6. That's tough. Right. I mean, you can take yourself down to the closest Indian casino and see if you can change your luck there.
Right. Exactly. Nothing about Oklahoma on paper should say that they should have experienced the sustained success that they have in our lifetime, right? They're Norman. They're, you know, it's not, you're not exactly in a recruiting hotbed. Obviously they can go into Texas, but all that stuff, but 20 plus years of national, contending programs, it doesn't make sense. And now 1 year of like just going to a bowl is like, oh my God, what is happening? Anyway, so.
to me, it's just how easy they thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
Like that's,
they thought they were going to like not even skip a beat.
They thought they were going to be any better. They thought they were going to be better. Like, oh man,
well, I was about to say, no, Lincoln Riley was actually holding us back.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Now imagine when we play defense, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And they just gave
up
51.
You're not playing either.
Yeah. They just gave up 51 and love it. So.
Oh no, I love it. This is hilarious to me.
Yeah, okay. It's given me life.
I was about to say, this will be a fun small little Oklahoma Rivals preview you do in the magazine this year. So there you go. All righty, let's talk about some other games with some other stakes. Somewhat stakes, but at least fun games to watch on in a vacuum. UTSA 34, UTEP 31. UTSA completes a 24-point comeback. This looked like it was going to be a literal replay of last year, except in a dome without weather being an excuse. When UTEP looked like they were just going to come out and slap UTSA all over the Alamo Dome floor. And UTSA, I'm almost sick about talking about how good this team is when they face situations where they should absolutely lose, when there's like an 80% chance that they lose the game and they win. Math, we've talked about math. Math says it shouldn't happen. Conventional wisdom says it shouldn't happen. And then it happens. I don't know. UTSA faces 80-20 odds and rolls 20 every single time. And I don't know how it happens. UTEP looks really good for the most part. Like Calvin Brownholtz gives them, you know, a running game, a running threat. And he had a huge run for them. And again, they played the game that they needed to play. They got on top. They made UTSA kind of get into a slugfest and have to battle back. And UTEP still comes up short. But let's talk about UTSA, of course, at first. I mean, what else can we say about this team at this point?
Yeah, I mean, they were down 24-0 to start
That's insane.
You know, and you're just Frank Harris.
Oh, you did it again.
Man, dang, I am so bad. Frank Harris goes to the it's only the team I watch every snap of since right. they've started the pro. Well, Frank Harris goes to the tent, Eddie Lee Marburger is out there, and it's like, oh, well, no, like just you know,
right. He's like, oh, you got the campus. Even if he's not hurt, he's got the right. campus championship. You'd hold him out, right?
Right. Well, and then you see, I mean, the guy misses two completions by like 30 yards, and you're like, oh, right. okay, well, this one is over. You know, like there is no opportunity for this because I didn't know if Frank was going to come back, even if he's just beat up a little bit. You know, you worry like, why not
hold him out, right?
Yeah,
save him for next week. Yeah,
you save him for next week or whatever, and. No, you know, he's back out there. He's going to go for 386, a couple touchdowns, no interceptions, all that kind of stuff. UTSA scores the final 20 points of the game and win another one possession game. Jeff Traylor is 18-6 in one possession games in his 2 years of college. One, that says how many close games UTSA has been in. I mean, that's 24 that's of the first 36 games that you coach are one possession games. But to win that many of them, it can't be luck. Like it just right. like, that's not how math works. I know. I mean, maybe I'm just breaking my brain on how like odds and statistics work. And it's different than I was ever taught, but there has to be something here. whether it's the senior quarterback, whether it's the way Jeff Traylor and that staff handle stuff, I don't know. But when UTSA is put up against the wall and it's a 50-50 shot of if they're going to come out with a win or not, you might as well make it 80-20 because UTSA is going to come out with that win. And that, I think it keeps them from ever panicking. You know, like when you do that over and over and over again and you look up and it's 24-0, I don't think anybody blinked. You know, it's just like, okay, well, here we go. Now we got to go catch up to this thing. And they slowly cut into it and slowly cut into it. The defense stepped up. And then on UTEP's side, you know, I thought Brownholtz looked really good. He just got banged up, man. They asked him to do so much that by the end of that game, he was a walking wounded. You know, he took some licks. They took away his legs. He couldn't run the ball anymore. There's just not enough weapons on UTEP's side of the field to do much, you know. And early on in the game, Dana Dimmel, I think, emptied 50 years worth of trick plays out. You know, like he put some stuff out there that UTSA had never seen on film. Well, eventually you run out of bullets. Like eventually you have to settle in and just run your offense. There's only so many trick plays that you can run. As soon as they got back to what they do normally, UTSA snuffed it out, had no problem. It's just a matter of if they were going to have enough times to score the points necessary to do that. And so a great win for UTSA, 10-win season, back-to-back years. They're going to be ranked, you know, I would imagine in all the polls going into next week. They got a home game, Conference USA Championship. So, yeah, man, Jeff Traylor, Frank Harris, if you got those two guys, you're going to win a lot of football games.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And unfortunately, you know, for UTEP, like you mentioned, emptied it out and just came up, still came up short. But still, I mean, this team, I feel like this team just needs like a replenishing, right? Like the depth isn't there. But I feel like the surface level talent, the first level talent is there to go to a bowl game, right? This is a bowl team. But it's just like you mentioned, when it just gets to third quarter, fourth quarter, it just doesn't, they just do not have the rotational guys to, you know, we saw with the suspensions earlier this year, right? When they don't have those first level guys, the next level is just not there. And I think that's kind of what they need most going into the offseason. It's just like a nice replenishing of the roster a little bit.
And the good news for UTEP is the teams that they're losing in Conference USA are going to be American teams next year. Sure. You know, and so that conference is going to come back to them, and they're going to be more in line with the talent level of everybody else, except for probably Liberty.
Yep. All righty. Moving on to SMU 34, Memphis 31. Rhett Lashley becomes the first year SMU head coach with with the most wins since Bobby Collins back in the Pony Express days. And man, it was a senior day showing, man. Rashee Rice break some records. I mean, Tanner Mordecai, as we know, he's going pro as well. I mean, it was a nice cap off to an SMU season that we thought, you know, at least on paper, we kind of checked them off in terms of accomplishing their goals. And they come out and beat a good Memphis team. This is kind of a good marking of the new AAC. Right. It's going to be Memphis. It's going to be obviously you throw UTSA and North Texas in there. But as far as like the established programs, you're going to be one of the big dogs with a Memphis and going into next year with a victory over them. Obviously, you have your control over your rival UNT. But for right now, man, this is a good win going forward for Rhett Lashley and the program, who's for all the excitement we've seen since Sonny Dykes came in to now is just not a program used to sustain success. And they're having it right now.
Yeah, that was the worry, right? Like Sonny Dykes, you know, for as much as SMU fans kind of jumped off that bandwagon and don't want to give him any of his flowers because he left, you know, for the crosstown rival, you know, he put SMU, he had the best 3-year span of SMU since the death penalty. And yeah. So I think the bones he left behind in that SMU locker room, not only just the talent, but the sustained success, some of the changes in terms of the Triple D and getting them ingratiated with Dallas and being Dallas's team and all that kind of stuff. Rhett Lashley, he didn't have to start from scratch. He got to just kind of keep pushing the ball down the road. And you could see that in these type of games. Like you don't win close games without belief in the locker room. This was a close game back and forth. It's like 7-7, 14-14, 21-21. I mean, it was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. The defense made a play at the end of the game. You know, SMU makes their field goal. They're up, you know, 34-23. Memphis comes down, makes it 34-31 with like 2.5 left. They end up getting the ball back, and they're driving, and it looks like they're going to score again to either kick a field goal, take it to overtime, or score a touchdown and win that thing. And, you know, Massey comes up with an interception in the end zone to ice that game away. And that's what SMU had been lacking. We knew Rashee Rice was really good. We knew Tanner Mordecai was really good. We knew that they're going to put up 30 plus points every single game. That's what Rhett Lashley offenses do. But could the defense come up with a stop when they needed to? They came up with those three interceptions against Houston. They came up with a big interception here against Memphis. They don't want to be a bend but don't break defense. They want to improve on that side of the ball, but you are who you are right now. And you're not going to stop a bunch of teams. What you can do is come up with a turnover or two. And when they've won football games, the defense has been able to do that. I think 7-5 with that defensive struggle and with quarterback issues kind of going throughout the year injury-wise, I think 7-5 is a good year for Rhett Lashley. It's something that they can use as a springboard to kind of keep that momentum in the city and in the transfer portal and on their recruiting trail going.
Yep. They finished fourth in the AAC. Joe Hoyt, again, we'll see what happens. But Joe Hoyt tweeted that Rashee Rice says he'll be back for the bowl game. Again, we'll see about that. It's different when you're in the midst of the high of your last game and all that stuff. But he is a DFW guy. Who knows if they play in the DFW bowl, he might want to play for a half or something. You know, I believe he was also the last player on the field for SMU. So like this obviously does. He does love that program, so like it wouldn't shock me if he's like, hey, coach, give me a half or something. I'll be good to go.
He's got some records he's chasing, too, like career awesome. Records and stuff like that. And so
that's a good point.
You know, and he's the one that said you don't come to DFW to go to Fort Worth, you know, so like he's on and he's from Fort Worth. He's all in on that program. I wouldn't be surprised if Mordecai and Rice at least play for a little bit for the bowl game, just because of, you know, what that university means to them. And that, you know, it's cool to see those stories with the way that we kind of talk about college athletics now. You know, there are still plenty of guys who are playing for the university, playing for their teammates.
Oh, yeah, for sure. One last thing, the hints towards the future. Kevin Jennings came in. Tanner Mordecai was knocked out for a little bit. He led a 91-yard drive, 16 plays. He looked really good. So, you know, again, we know Preston Stone's probably the future of that program, but that just shows the depth and kind of the, you know, let's just say that Kevin Jennings, it's not going to be, every time you see something like this, you're like, oh, where's he going to transfer? Well, it's like, no, he's from Dallas. Like, so he's probably going to, like, this is the kind of the identity that Sonny Dykes helped establish. Rhett Lashley's keeping going. And I mean, that's something that is going to be help them have sustained success if they can keep talent in Dallas. So, alrighty, moving on to TCU 62, Iowa State 14. Listen, after all the games that had gone on before, everybody all of a sudden was turning their sights after Ohio State, Michigan to what TCU did. It was like, oh, is this the game where they fumble and they you know, with their slow starts catch up to them? Nope. TCU is tired of being that team that everybody picks to lose every single week, and they just put it on Iowa State. It was not close. It was never close. They came out and had their best start probably of the season, and they just came out clean and silenced some haters, man, because every week, going back to being an underdog against Texas on the road to last week to whenever, you know, they haven't made it easy on themselves, but still, they've been picked to lose every single week, and TCU just came out and said, nah, screw this. We're coming out, and we're making a statement victory.
It was a weird week. You know, Ohio State gets blown out. Clemson gets beat. LSU ends up losing later in the night. It's like, is this going to be one of those weekends that just makes this all weird? You look down and TCU's up 24-0 at the end of the first quarter. It's like, nope, not the Horned Frogs. Like they are ready to go. Had Max Duggan not taken a snap in this game, it's still 14-14. That's how good the defense played. They scored on two pick sixes. You know, Bradford had an interception return for a touchdown. Newton had an interception return for a touchdown. So just a complete game. Griffin Kale keeps making field goal kicks. So like, it's just a team that plays every single phase of the football game. Coaches talk about complimentary football to a point where it's nauseating, but this is what they're talking about, right? It was when your offense can score a bunch of points, your defense can create plays that score points, your special teams is reliable. You're going to win a lot of football games, especially against a team who has, I guess, become Iowa to beat Iowa at Iowa State. Right.
I was about to say they are not fun to watch.
Do you know anybody who's like cost themselves more money than Matt Campbell? Cause like, I don't know anybody who's ever cost themselves more money than Matt Campbell. And so all of a sudden you look down and, you know, despite all of our transgressions throughout the year, all of our trepidations. TCU is 12-0. They basically get a home game next week. I mean, they only got to go to Arlington. It's not like they got to travel. They're going to play a Kansas State team that they've already played. They've already beaten. And so, you know, if they can just win that one more game, they're in this thing. And I think I could make an argument, even if they lose it closely, you know, they're still in this conversation because of everything that went down yesterday. So just an unbelievable job by Sonny Dykes and that coaching staff. It is amazing that this is essentially the same roster that went 5-7 and got Gary Patterson up out of there last year. Max Duggan's been excellent. Kendre Miller, my Lord. Like that stellar. Dude is so really good. I think he has like 13 straight games with a touchdown. He's like doing things that only LaDainian Tomlinson has ever done at TCU. They did this yesterday without Quentin Johnston.
Yeah, I was about to say, like they scored
62 points on a top 10 national defense without their best player. And so they're rolling. I was worried, you know, because you go on the road and you play an emotional game and you beat Texas. And then you go on the road and you play an emotional game and you win in the last second against Baylor in a rivalry. Like, how do you get back up against a team that stinks? You know, that's not very good, at least offensively. I thought this would be one of those where it's like 13-10 in the fourth quarter. And it's like, oh, God, TCU, don't mess around with this one. And instead, they just made Iowa State quit basically from the jump.
Yep. Yeah, I was about to say here's the thing. TCU out of Georgia, Ohio State, and Michigan had the toughest road to go, right? People talk about, oh, what's TCU, who they played on. They had the toughest strength of schedule out of anybody in the playoff right now. And I get it. They haven't always looked great. They've started off slow in most of their games. I get it. Max Duggan, like you mentioned, is the same roster, but particularly the same quarterback that led them to 5-7 last year, right? I get where the questions came from. We had them, right? We were trying to figure out if this team was real for the longest time. But the point is, they've gotten it done. And at this point, you just got to say, yeah, they are who they are until they aren't, right? Like until they do lose, this is a team that is in the national title picture that should be. And like you mentioned, even if they lose next week, they probably should still be just because of the strength of schedule and all that. Okay, the Big 12 is the toughest conference in the country this year, probably, right? Top to bottom. I don't know. I don't know what else they could do to get some damn respect around here. Because, I mean, it seems every week that they're like, okay, here's where TCU loses and we don't have to pay attention to them anymore. And they've just continued to win.
If Max Duggan doesn't go to New York, I may buy him a ticket just so he gets the trip. Like this is a guy who his own coaching staff this year didn't think was going to be the starter.
Right. Yeah.
Chandler Morris started the first game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was at the Baylor TCU game,
nobody batted an eye either.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They were like, oh yeah, Chandler Morris. That makes sense.
Of course he did. Like, you know, like, you know, when I'm at the Baylor TCU game, there's a lot of Baylor people that are like, you know, we'd be more scared of the other guy that beat us last year than we had Max Duggan. That's when they were like 10-0 already, you know? He's just the Rodney Dangerfield of college football right now. And like when you lead a team to 12-0 after they're 5-7 and you're doing it with the numbers he's putting up, you absolutely deserve to be a Heisman contender. If this was happening at Texas or Oklahoma, he'd already be given the trophy. And so, you know, you're just fighting against the helmet stigma at TCU. And I don't get where it comes from, because as we just mentioned, the Big 12 is obviously the deepest and most talented, best conference in college football this year. And he just ran the table and, you know, won big games on the road, won big games at home, led comebacks. He did everything that you can possibly do. And you know, it's really just been an amazing ride. And one of those where, you know, if you're Max Duggan, just don't pinch yourself for the next couple of weeks. Cause it's been that kind of dream.
Seriously. Alrighty. We will talk about them, of course, in the conference championship previews we got coming up this week. Moving on to, I mean, we don't have to talk about the game here. There's a lot off the field to talk about here. Louisiana 41, Texas State 13. Listen, season's over. Thank God. I'm just very happy. I did not watch a single second of this game. I did not care. I mean, we're on watch, right? That's kind of the story of this one. I can say what are the split zone duo terminology? I think is the opinion. So I'm going to say, I think we are out of time. I feel, which is the, I've talked around, but not really firmly confirming something. I feel that there's some behind the scenes shenanigans, maybe the reason why this hasn't gone through yet. And yeah, that's what I'm going to say right now. but yeah, I feel like we are on watch. Let's just put it that way.
I feel as if this gets past Monday without any news, things are getting weird behind the scenes, mm-hmm. right? It feels like if something's going to happen, it's going to come out either Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, or someday, some part of the day, Monday. Yeah. If it gets beyond that, then there are some real conversations going on behind the scenes to maybe keep Jake Spavadol.
Yes.
I know that a bunch of coaches in college football are already inquiring about this job and positioning themselves to get an interview or be in that mix, even not as the head coach, not even as the head coach, but like, hey, who's going to be the head coach? I want to be on that staff. Right. And so when that starts happening, stuff is going on because the agents know everything. And there's only about 10 agents that control college football and they all work together. And so that's usually how these things come out is through the agents. And if the college coaches are already asking people like me questions, then the agents are talking. And so it feels more likely than not that that was the last game that Jake Spavadol is going to coach in San Marcos. But I also know that it is not done yet. And so we will see how that unfolds over the next 48 to 72 hours.
That's basically it. There's not much to talk about this game. Yeah, it wasn't fun to watch. And it, unfortunately for a lot of the seniors there, you know, it wasn't a great crowd, obviously. But there's going to be some big players out the door, you know, Marcel Barbie, Sione Tupo, things like that. Like some big contributors. The Bells, right? The Bells aren't going to come back. And they were huge players this year for that defense. So unfortunately for them, they couldn't see, they couldn't reap the benefits of having their best defense as they transitioned to FBS. So if something does happen, Zach Spavadol, he'll be on the call very quickly to somebody, whether it's a position coach or a coordinator gig somewhere, because he did a stellar job this year with this unit. So
and so will Jake, to be fair.
No, I was about to say, yeah, no, 100%. I'm right. Talking more like he'll, unfortunately, it'll be a demotion for Jake Spavadol from head coach to OC. But Zach Spavadol, I think you can make an argument he should deserves, you know, a parallel, what's the word? Sideways gigs, parallel job, you know, some a comparable job to what he did here. But yeah, no, Jake Spavadol, absolutely, he's going to be an OC somewhere at a Power Five program and be perfectly fine if something happens.
Oh, like Houston or something.
Yeah, probably. I was about to say, hook up with his boys again, man. That'll be fun. All righty, moving on to, they somehow find a way to do it every single time. Texas A&M 38, LSU 23. Listen, when every time we're like, yeah, there's no way this happens, it happens. I have no idea what to think about this win, because is this Jimbo saying, wow, we have some young talent, I should put some good coaches around them? Or I know what I'm doing. Look at this. What do you mean?
More likely than not, it's that second scenario.
Just say, what are y'all talking about? We got Devonta Chain going for 200.
Yep.
We got Connor Wigman showing some stuff. We got Moose Muhammad. I got this, right? I have no idea which one it is. I would like to believe it's the first one saying, you know what? Yeah, let's put some fun coordinators around these guys. But like Mallory said, I just don't, in the back of my mind, I can't help but think that it's the latter.
Yeah, I sent three or four texts to like Aggie friends, a couple former players and stuff like that. It's like, was that the worst thing that could have happened? You know, because like, yeah, I mean, he's going to look up and be like, well, I just beat Brian Kelly. We scored 38 points. You know, like we looked really good. You know, like all of a sudden,
I know how to beat Saban and Brian Kelly.
Right. Exactly. Like we're right there on the doorstep, guys. Like what do we need? We just need to get older. We just need a couple birthdays. You
yeah,
know? Like
we're, say more transfers, we're more okay. Max Johnsons.
Devon Achane.
Ooh.
This year had to be really hard to be that good, to have that many guys leave. You're on a 6-game losing streak. He hasn't been healthy for most of the year. You know, he's had some, you know, bumps and bruises like most people, missed a game or two along the way. And then on, you know, what is his senior night? What's going to be his last game in Kyle Field? He has 38 carries for 215 yards and two touchdowns. Mm. Now, I know you can't do that every single week, because in modern football, that's child abuse and you're not allowed to do that.
Right.
But you just wonder, it's kind of like with the Bijan Robinson, Rashawn Johnson thing. You just look at it and you go like, why wasn't that closer to 30 every single week?
Right.
You know, like if he's in there, he gets the ball. He's that good. He is your best player far and away. I thought Moose Muhammad has come on and looked really good. You know, Evan Stewart's back. Moose Muhammad's there. Donovan Green at tight end. Connor Wigman at quarterback. I mean, you got some stuff happening there. The offensive line needs to get fixed. But again, it's the defense for me. You know, they played pretty well yesterday. You know, LSU, you know, I don't watch a lot of SEC football because I feel like it's overhyped. And, you know, like yesterday was the perfect example of that. I had been hearing that Jaden Daniels kid was like Cam Newton or something like that. He's not. Maybe one day he will be, but he's a good player that like has talent and may grow into be a great player. But he's a solid player right now. I'm still just surprised. Like that 2022 class is living up to its hype on the offensive side of the football.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also in the secondary of the, you know, Denver Harris was good.
A different story.
Denver Harris was solid before his all stuff. Bryce Anderson's been one of the best true freshmen in the nation. Mm-hmm. Probably the best freshman defensive player in the state this year. But like where are all the defensive alignment?
Mm-hmm.
Like I still just don't know where those guys are. That's going to be a major concern, but you know, hopefully jokes aside, hopefully Jimbo sees all that talent and goes, if we can just get some modern systems in here that are a little bit easier, that a little bit more natural from what these guys were running in high school, we are talent wise ready to make a big jump up and go compete for an SEC champ. Cause like, as we saw, LSU was able to do that in the West this year. So you can go from basement to top if you figure it out scheme wise. It's just going to be about his ego, his pride, and we're going to see how much he can put that to the side.
Yeah, I think for me, that catch from Moose Muhammad, where he was getting held, and just like, honestly, that was, it was a two-parter, right? The, obviously, the one-handed catch over the shoulder, insane talent. But also, Connor Wigman put that in like the perfect spot, right? Obviously, that was like probably 70-30 Moose Muhammad because of that catch. But that placement of that is not easy as well. Like that is some good, like, again, if you're an A&M fan, you're like the future, you're seeing it, right? If I'm because of how bad this season's gone, if I'm Jimbo, I'm looking at next year and it's like, yeah, that 2022 class is the team next year, right? That is just the team. And if you come away with, you know, you can probably, it'll probably make, get made fun of, but like if they come away with 8 wins, but it's all those sophomores, right? Maybe redshirt freshman. That's a different story. And you're running a different offense. That's a different story than 8 wins this year, right? If you had 8 wins this year, it still wouldn't have been good enough to what you thought you were going to be. But if you have 8 wins next year, you're playing a different offense. It's all those sophomores that you brought in from that class. Okay. Then you're looking at something, right? Then you're changing something. We know Jimbo Fisher is a chess type of coach. He goes up against a Brian Kelly. He goes up against a Nick Saban. He's going to roll out the chessboard and say, what can I do? Right. He's going to match somebody scheme for scheme. How can I beat this guy? How can I outmaneuver this guy? But it's the overall, he can game plan for a specific game, but it's the overall direction that's kind of been the issue, right? It's not an individual game. It's about the full trajectory of the program that's been the issue this year. And that's kind of shown wrinkles in the past couple of years that we haven't had the total collapse to where you could really look at the big picture and say, ooh, this isn't working or something's not working here. Now you're seeing what he can do right. He can recruit right. He can, you know, like I mentioned, he can have the one-off game where he needs to one-on-one scheme against another good game planner, and he can do that. That's what the CEO coach needs to be able to do, right? He needs to be able to have the full plan and say, here's how we go forward. Here's what we can do. Here's how we can recruit. Here's what we can hire, because he can hire really well too. But then also he needs to be able to dust off the chalkboard and say, okay, Brian Kelly, what you got? Right. Nick Saban, what you got? Nick Saban can do that. And so if he can just take a little bit hands off going forward, this program's there, man. Because this is multiple games now where we've seen this 2022 class on offense in particular flash what it has. And yeah, if not, again, we're going to see a mass exodus, but you know, right now A&M ended about as well as it could have, you know, for considering everything that was happening. You're still obviously disappointed with the way the season's gone, but there's little bit,
little bit glimmers, little glimmers out there, a little bit of optimism. So going forward, so we'll see what he does in the next couple months.
If I'm an A&M fan, I'm worried if there's not a new offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator next year. The DJ Durkin stuff hasn't worked. And maybe getting a second year helps or something like that. But the step back that defense has taken back is as big as the offense. It's just harder to talk about.
Yep, 100%. I wonder, they have a young co-DC there, Tyler Santucci, who was there under Mike Elko as well. I wonder if they maybe make a promotion there because he's coached under both, right? I don't know. He's a young guy. He's somebody who can be there for a couple years, theoretically. I don't know. I don't know if he's ready for that, but I know he's still in his, you know, he's still very young. I believe he's in mid-30s. But still, you know, I just wonder if he's somebody who Jimbo Fisher has been holding on to for a while, because I believe he started off as an analyst there and he's kind of interestingly hung around for a while. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe push some more responsibility his way going forward. All right. One more, right? I'm not fumbling this one like I did during the week. Tulsa 37, Houston 30. Look, I'm so glad we don't have to talk about the Houston team anymore. This is a very annoying team to talk about.
Feels like every time you take a step forward, they end up taking a step back. It's just a dancing game with them, you know?
It really is. I feel bad because Tank Dell looked amazing again. 161 yards through the air. He flashed run after the catch. He flashed deep threat ability. Like he did everything. He had a special teams touchdown. And Tulsa comes away with a win. On senior day. That's not fun, man. I don't know. Speaking of teams that we're going to talk a lot about this offseason, Houston, because you're going to the Big 12, man, and we just talked about how good this Big 12 is this year. I don't know.
There was only one team Houston held under 20 points this year, and that was last week against East Carolina. Everybody else has scored at least 20 points. 10 out of the 12 scored at least 27.
And then coming off the Eastern Carolina win, man, that was a great win.
And I think that's the perfect illustration of what this Houston team is. They have no idea who they are from one week to the next. When Dana Holgorsen, and credit to him for being honest, after last week was like, I had no idea we would get that type of performance at any point this year. He told you everything you needed to know about the Cougars. Like when the head coach isn't sure what you're capable of, or if you're capable of putting your best foot forward for a full game, then how can the players be? How can anybody else be around that program to follow up that East Carolina win in a dominant way, and the defense playing well, Clayton Toon, Nathaniel Dell, all that kind of stuff, to giving up 37 points against Tulsa, to only scoring 6 points in the second half, 2 field goals, no touchdowns in the second half against Tulsa, a Tulsa team that's probably going to have a new head coach next year. That was probably it for that coaching staff. Might be a guy from Texas, by the way, the FCS ranks. But just to fold that way in the final game of the year is a big deal. Like we talked about with Texas earlier, the difference between 8-4 and 7-5 is monstrous. To go 7-5 with those type of expectations, there's nowhere else to put it. It's a disappointment. And now the hot seat and the pressure really turns up on Dana Holgorsen, because it feels like he's going to get year one in the Big 12. And then they're going to have to figure out if it's going the right way or not. Dana Holgorsen at Houston was hired to put Houston in a position to compete in the Big 12 as soon as they got there. That was the whole point. It looked like heading out of last year, that's exactly where this program was going to be. You flash forward 12 months, and it looks like the Cougars are in the fourth worst position out of four teams to join the Big 12 and have success right away. I would say they're more in the Kansas, West Virginia, Iowa State range than they are anywhere else in the Big 12. And that's not what Fertitta is paying Holgorsen to be.
Yep, 100%. I mean, you finished fifth in the AAC, right? Behind your in-state opponent in SMU because of the tiebreaker. Behind two teams that are going with you to the Big 12, right? And yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, your positioning is worse going forward into the Big 12. Now you have to look at, if you're a booster, if you're the AD, if you're the administration, you have to look at Dana Holgorsen and say, one, lay out the plan for this offseason to how we don't get our butt kicked next year in the Big 12. Two, what's the 3 to 5 year plan, right? What are you selling us? What are you selling recruits on right now going to the Big 12? Because right now, what's stopping them from just go? If you're, because with Houston, your aspiration is to eventually snag a couple from Texas, right? You're in Houston, you have the facility, you have the brand and the market to be able to say, you're not going to recruit a top five class, but you can snag maybe one guy that's in a recruiting battle with Texas, right? That's your aspiration to getting to the Big 12. Why would they do that right now? You know, or why wouldn't they just go to Tech or TCU or Baylor, right? Like what is separating you from those programs besides being in Houston, right? Yeah, sure. That's awesome. If you want to keep a guy home, that's great. But right now on the field, facilities wise, all those things, what is stopping them from just saying, yeah, no, I'm going to go with one of the programs that's looking pretty good right now. Because of last week, you're looking like a bunch of wasted talent right now. Like it really does. Like Tank Dell, he ain't coming back. Like what at this point, he would just be coming back just to say he played in the Big 12. That's it, right? He's flashed everything he's needed to. You can just put his yesterday's game on his NFL draft tape, right? That's just like, I can return punts. I can, you know, run after the catch. I can route run. I can burn a guy deep. Cool. I'm in, right? But yeah, if you're Houston right now, okay. It's, you know, do you make a change in defensive coordinator? Probably. Right? Do you bring in somebody to help out with the offense? Probably maybe a play caller. You know, Dana Holgerson is the guy, but and it's his offense. But maybe somebody, like you mentioned with Jake Spavital, right? Somebody he trusts to call his offense. Maybe, I don't know. It's a lot of soul searching going on right now for Houston.
Because they're 64th in recruiting right now and only have one player in the top 250, and he's 248, and that's Jonah Wilson, wide receiver.
Yeah, and the other thing is, the thing that hasn't been talked about enough is that he hasn't been recruiting well at all, like, his whole tenure, right? Obviously, Nathaniel Dell, he'll get a guy like a Matthew Golden, things like that. But, like, top-to-bottom recruiting classes, he has not had, like, SMU's been probably recruiting better than Houston, right? In terms of top-to-bottom since Sonny Dykes has got there comparatively to when Dana Holgerson got there. It had, like, they've taken a step back from the Herman Applewhite, you know, years in terms of on-field recruiting as far as full classes go. So, yeah, it's hard to, you're starting to run out of things to point to, right? I mean, obviously the offense is going to be good. Okay, cool. But, like, you're Dana Holgerson. Your offense is always going to be good. You're a head coach, right? This isn't the NFL where you can just be a quarterback coach and just kind of call a play and then hire somebody to take care of the defense or whatever. You're in charge of the whole thing, recruiting, hiring, all that stuff. And it falls on Dana Holgerson's shoulders. And yeah, I think next year he gets next year, obviously, but they're going to want some assurances going forward in terms of where the program is going. Cause we're 3 years out from the president saying we fire coaches for 8-4.
Yep.
So that's the standard of Houston, man. That's the standard. All right, so that'll do it for us. We did it. Our last recruiting or last recap episode of the year. We'll have our preview episode for conference championship week on Wednesday. Craven, I'm assuming you're going to be in San Antonio, right? I'm trying to figure out when the dates are, I guess.
No, I think I'm only going to the Big 12 championship game because one is Friday at 6:30 and the other one's Saturday at 11 a.m. It would make for I don't really know how I'd do it. I guess I'd have to get like a really early flight Saturday, get like land at like 8 and just go straight to Jerry World or something like that. So
right.
I think I'm going to, with TCU playing for a spot in the college football playoff, mm-hmm. Sure. I think I'm going to unfortunately miss my personal favorite bowl of North Texas versus UTSA.
You'll be there in spirit. But anyway, so that'll do it for us, our final recap edition, but we will not be going anywhere. Of course, we'll be with you guys with a preview. We'll have our bowl previews, we'll have all that stuff, but as far as running down every single team, that's where we're done for the year. Mike Craven, Mallory Hartley, good work this year, guys. We did it again. Regular season's done.
It's wild to think about. All we got left is like what, state championship games, 10 bowl games, and, you know, recruiting signing day. So no big deal. Yep. Light work ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
It still seems like a lot.
Comparatively light work, comparatively to what we're used to. So anyway, with that being said, we've interviewed 12 of the eventual 13 FBS head coaches. Shout out Sam Houston State. And as usual, I don't even know if they won this weekend. Go Rutgers, but
still. They got shut out 37-0. Not a big deal.
Anyway, go Rutgers.